Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak in for Marty Musk-Hawain. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett announced this week that he's willing to accept billions of dollars in federal aid to expand health care coverage to more of Pennsylvania's uninsured residents. The Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, provides for an expansion of Medicaid. Governor Corbett takes a different view. Rather than expanding Medicaid, he says, the new Healthy PA plan will allow another 500,000 uninsured Pennsylvanians to purchase private insurance with premiums of up to $25 and a requirement for able-bodied recipients to be enrolled in a job program. The governor's plan is subject to approval from Washington, which is not guaranteed at this point. So this hour, we debate the issue of Medicaid expansion, but we begin with a look at the politics of what might be called Corbett Care. What are the risks for the governor, for the medical community, and the people who currently have no health insurance? Joining us from Harrisburg is John Misick. He is the editor of the editorial and opinion pages for the Patriot News and Penn Live. And prior to that, John covered state government for the Allentown Morning Call for 12 years. John, welcome to Radio Times.
Good morning, Tracy.
So the governor says he's willing to accept federal dollars that are technically available to expand Medicaid, but he's careful to say that what he is proposing is not an expansion. So what exactly is the governor proposing here?
It's funny. He doesn't want to call it Obamacare, but it's coming from the same pot of federal money, so Obamacare by any other name, I guess. It's been a delicate dance. The governor has been working for months with the Department of Health and Human Services to try to find some way around the Medicaid expansion in Obamacare. About 25 states have accepted the federal money so far, including many of his fellow Republican governors, such as Chris Christie in New Jersey, Jan Brewer in Arizona, Scott Walker in Wisconsin. So he's sort of a holdout among the class of 2010 for not embracing this federal money. It's kind of curious. I mean, this is what we're seeing here is sort of the tension between free market Republicans who are looking for private sector solutions, and the Obama administration's more sort of, I guess, global and comprehensive approach.
So he's talking about adding some, he has called it reform, right? He has created a reformed version of this plan. So if you're one of the 500,000 uninsured Pennsylvanians who stands to be eligible now, what would the governor's plan mean for you?
Theoretically, it would mean coverage under the state's Medicaid program. But as you've noted early on, there are some job search requirements. There's a maximum $25 a month copay for some recipients, and advocates for the poor say, you know, the folks who are on welfare who get like $319 a month, $25 would be out of reach for them. So there are some definite tensions here, and of course this whole thing is subject to federal approval, and Iowa and Arkansas are proceeding down a similar path. So conceivably, you know, the governor could wait around for months for Washington to decide on this, lose, and then these folks don't have any coverage anyway. So that's sort of the risk here.
Well, right, and that raises an important question because you have written about some of the risks that you say are embedded in the governor's plan. That's certainly one of them. So suppose that it doesn't go through, the Obama administration does not approve it, and now are we back to square one?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, the governor will then have to decide if he loses out on this, does he just want to bite down and accept the federal money and call it Obamacare, just like Governors Christie and Brewer and Walker have done, or does he want to again go to the drawing board? By that time, though, we're probably into 2014. That's the reelection cycle for the governor, and he's probably going to get clubbed over the head by his Democratic rivals. And, you know, this does open potentially, you know, some unrest in the Republican grassroots, which we already saw this week with Daryl Metcalf, one of the great conservative members of the legislature, stepping forward to slam this as the state effectively accepting Obamacare. We had another representative from Cumberland County, Stephen Bloom, writing in the pages of Penn Live this week that this is, you know, Obamacare getting its nose under the tent, to mix my metaphors. But, yeah, so the governor faces problems even within his own party now.
Right, so it sounds like the governor could find himself between a rock and a hard place, right, because Democrats certainly will oppose this idea or will blame him if it doesn't go through. And there are many of those in his own party who just are not happy with this regardless.
Exactly. I mean, there are some Republicans who are questioning the administration's claim that none of this would require legislative authorization. So if they end up being right and the governor has to go to his fellow Republicans in the State House and State Senate and ask for approval for some of this stuff, he could be in for a very bumpy ride.
Yeah. The governor has expressed some concerns, John, that the federal government may renege on its promise to cover 100% for the first 3 years and then no less than 90% in the years following. Is that a legitimate concern?
That's what he's saying, and certainly, you know, when you look at federal support, say in the area of special education, which has declined, you know, it's not without some justification. But again, you sort of fall back to the position that you know, the other governors looked at this money and decided to roll the dice. You know, if in 5 years they look up and their level of federal support has declined, you know, that could be an issue. I mean, the other thing here is that Pennsylvania's Medicaid program, known as Medicaid assistance in this state, offers some benefits that are more generous than in other states. So that is also a problem. So there could be, you know, benefit rollbacks or, again, the potential for copays or something else if, you know, the state looks up in a couple of years' time and finds that it's not getting the money that it needs for this.
Speaking of Medicaid, Governor Corbett was quoted as calling it an entitlement that is unsustainable. Is that statement likely to come back to haunt him in the election cycle next year?
I suspect that if I were one of the 9,000 Democrats, or however many it is now, seeking the nomination in 2014, that I have tucked that one away for future use. I mean, the governor's comments about the unemployed during the 2010 campaign and subsequently, you know, were seized upon to sort of portray him as an enemy of the poor. They call this an unsustainable entitlement when it's one of the sort of pillars of the American social welfare net. You know, does not do him any favors either.
How are the governor's approval ratings right now, John?
Pretty awful, in fact. You know, I think if he's above 30%, it's a miracle in approval ratings. His approval ratings now are lower than Governors Tom Ridge or Ed Rendell at similar points in their first term. He can take some solace in knowing that the legislature's approval ratings are even lower than his. So there is some comfort in that. But, I mean, you know, the governor has an image, in all seriousness, the governor has an image problem among state voters, among female voters, and even among voters in his own party. I think there's something like 45% in one recent poll of Republicans who were not convinced that he deserved a second term. You know, that said, though, I mean, this week we saw some fairly major establishment conservatives, Tom Ridge and Rick Santorum, for instance, come out and say that they were going to back the governor in 2014. So that may mollify some of the Republican ranks, but, you know, it's an honest-to-goodness problem.
What about the timing of this, John? Because for most people, this is going to take effect January 1, 2014. So here we are in September, and the administration still would have to approve this plan. It sounds like there are still some open switches, if you will. Is it realistic that this could be in place January 1?
You know, to be honest, I don't know enough about the bureaucratic machinery of the Affordable Care Act to know whether it will be in place by the first of the year or not. Though, you know, basing it on my sense of government bureaucracies in general, that seems a fairly optimistic time frame.
What about the work requirement, John? At least the requirement that those who are uninsured but able-bodied need to be in some sort of job training program, job search program. Is that something that other Republican governors are also, in favor of, or is this uniquely Pennsylvania, and how does that work?
Well, Pennsylvania is the only state that has sought the job search requirement as a condition for extending benefit. So the governor does stand alone on that. That said, though, there is a certain degree of sort of policy alignment with this request. The administration just a few weeks ago put into place new rules. Put into place new rules for unemployment recipients that they would have to be actively searching for jobs and in a program to receive benefits. So there is some policy consistency there, but the governor does stand alone on this job search requirement for Medicaid.
So how is that enforced? Suppose that requirement you know, meets with the approval of the administration, and now the requirement is that if you're in this program, you've got to be looking for work or in job training. My guess is that a number of people who are would be eligible are already in that process, or perhaps they've joined the ranks of the discouraged workers at this point.
That is entirely possible. I mean, the administration admits that it has no way to enforce those rules for unemployment recipients. You know, they would have to show, I guess, written evidence of job searching. They would be required to check in at the Career Link centers every couple of weeks, I think. So there would be some benchmarks for them, but right now they've admitted that they don't have sort of the mechanism and machinery in place to even do that for unemployment compensation recipients. So trying to extend that for Medicaid beneficiaries, who you correctly note might sort of cross-pollinate between those two groups, could be difficult.
You know, the timing is interesting as well, John, because just this morning, as you no doubt know, lots of stories in the papers about the House passing a bill that would effectively remove a number of people from food stamps as well. Now, that's not the final word on the subject, but I suspect it may be something that you may be writing about at some point. Talk about the politics of that and the timing of that as we're talking about health care reform as well.
Well, I mean, it's you know, we're talking, that happened, and then today Congress is supposed to vote on a continuing resolution, like the 40th, I think, that would defund Obamacare. It's a fruitless gesture because it's not going to go anywhere in the Senate, and certainly the president's not about to sign anything like that into law. But, I mean, it's sort of a symbol of the times that we find ourselves in. You know, the timing was coincidental. The timing was unfortunate. I mean, the thing I think that's the most pernicious about the SNAP bill, this is what the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, which is what they would call food stamps these days, is that for many years it was sort of the glue that held the farm bill together between urban lawmakers and rural lawmakers. This is the one thing they could all agree on, so that the much larger farm subsidy and farm agricultural appropriation bill could make it through the process. But and by carving this out, you know, they're affecting tens of millions of people across the country. I don't know what the figures are for recipients here in Pennsylvania. And it certainly doesn't help Republicans in Congress with the image problem that they have now. And again, congressional approval ratings are at historic lows. The Republican leadership is seen as kind of tone deaf and an enemy to the disadvantaged. And this is just sort of one more strike against them, I think.
Well, we have much more to talk about as it relates to Governor Corbett's plan for covering the uninsured here in Pennsylvania, and we will be debating the whole issue of Medicaid expansion. Is that something that we should be doing or not doing? We've got some guests on standby to help us understand both sides of that issue. John Micek, thank you so much for being with us on Radio
You're welcome.
Times. John is the editor of the editorial and opinion pages for The Patriot News and Penn Live. You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY.
The Rodale Institute supports WHYY and will open its Kutztown Organic Farm Orchard for the whole family to pick organic apples, eat organic food, and take wagon rides to the pumpkin patch. Experts will be on hand to answer questions about growing fruit trees organically. Since 1947, the Rodale Institute has taught that healthy soil equals healthy food equals healthy people. The Rodale Institute's Organic Apple Festival is open to the public on Saturday, September 21st from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. in Kutztown. More at rodaleinstitute.org.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, in 1984, American families spent 17% of their income on food. Today, we only spend 11%. Sounds like a good thing, but one chef says our savings are taking a toll on our health and the environment. That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Hello, I'm Russell Kaufman, president of the Wistar Institute, a proud supporter of WHYY. For over 100 years, Wistar scientists have helped keep your families, friends, and employees healthy because of our research that guides the creation of early-stage drugs. We then work with the pharmaceutical industry for their final production. Our name may not be on these cancer drugs, but our fingerprints are all over them. To learn more about how Wistar keeps you healthy and our region economically strong, online at wistar.org.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, in for Marty Moscowane. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Corbett announced this week that he is willing to accept billions of federal dollars available to expand Medicaid, except he wants to use the funds in a different way, namely to allow 500,000 uninsured Pennsylvanians to purchase private health coverage. Recipients would have to pay premiums up to $25, and unemployed recipients would have to sign up for job training or job search programs in order to keep their premiums down. Joining us now to debate the issue of Medicaid expansion is Richard Weishaupt. He is senior attorney at Community Legal Services in Philadelphia, where he specializes in healthcare law. Richard, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you, Tracy.
And we also have with us Nate Benefield, who is Director of Policy Analysis for the Commonwealth Foundation for Public Policy Alternatives. Nate, welcome to Radio Times.
Thank you, Tracy. Good morning.
So let me begin, Richard, with you. Why should Medicaid be expanded in Pennsylvania and elsewhere for that matter?
Because we have a crisis in the healthcare system right now because there are so many Americans with or who are lacking health insurance. It's estimated that there may be 613 million people in Pennsylvania, 1,000 people in Pennsylvania without health insurance, and that number is growing. It's an ongoing trend as employer-based insurance has gone down.
So even if the governor's plan goes through as proposed, there will still be a number of people without insurance.
That's probably true, correct? And depending upon the friction and the red tape and the educational effort that's needed to get people to use the program and sign up for it, that's also a question that still remains open.
Nathan Benefield, you say otherwise. What do you say?
Well, I want to take a step back first and just talk about the current Medicaid program, even before expansion. That what we agree with Governor Corbett is that it has to be reformed. That it's not sustainable the way it is now. Medicaid spending growth has, over the last decade, has outpaced our state economy, outpaced taxpayer income, and continues to consume a greater percentage of state spending. It's now, today, one in every $3 state government spends is for Medicaid. That share has been growing and crowding out other areas of the state. And moreover, Medicaid is not really providing good coverage of insurance for these poor and needy individuals. Medicaid pays doctors much less than traditional private insurance, and so a lot of doctors won't take it. One survey puts it at one in three doctors won't take Medicaid patients. So Medicaid patients often have longer wait times, can't see specialists, and don't really get, we're not really providing health care with them. We're giving them a government insurance card, which doesn't guarantee that they have access to care. So we are in full agreement that before we talk expansion, we need to talk about how to reform the current system. And we didn't agree entirely with Governor Corbett's proposal on how he would do it. We would have different reforms we would recommend, and we can talk about that later. But don't agree that that we should have a trade-off where we have to, in order to get federal flexibility to reform our Medicaid program, that what we need to do is create a new entitlement program and make more people dependent on government for their health insurance, because we believe that they're better off in the private market, being independent of government and getting health insurance and coverage with employers or in an individual market. And the reforms that we should be doing is trying to make insurance more affordable so that people can get it on their own.
Let me take a moment and just invite our listeners to join us in our conversation. We are talking about health care reform, specifically as it relates to Pennsylvania, but we're talking about Medicaid expansion, whether we should do that or not, and about Governor Corbett's new plan for coverage for uninsured Pennsylvanians. The number to join us is 1-888-477-9499. And Richard Weishaupt, let me put that question to you that Nate Benefield just raised about reforming Medicaid. His point is that the costs of Medicaid have become out of control, and we need to first talk about reform. Do you agree?
No. And the last election proved that. The Affordable Care Act has been in effect for 3.5 years. It is the effort to make sure that all Americans have health insurance. Mr. Benefield did not mention or even address the fact that there are 613,000 people in Pennsylvania who are good Pennsylvanians and do the right thing every day, and they don't have health insurance, and they desperately need it. And there's no market for them that they can find affordable health insurance. What this would do would be what is going to go into effect on January 1st of 2014 is an exchange where people will be able to buy health insurance if they can afford it, and they'll get subsidies to help them with that. The problem is that we also have people whose incomes are so low that they cannot afford anything to purchase insurance, at least right now. Some of those people are short-term unemployed. Some of those people are the people who cut your hair and serve you your coffee in the morning and deliver your newspaper. And those folks work hard every day, and they need a way to have health insurance.
Nate, you have suggested that the governor's plan, that Medicaid expansion in general, could hurt the very people that it's designed to help. How so?
Well, a couple of the reforms he's suggesting in terms of reforming the current Medicaid program, there were basically five things they were trying to do. They included, you know, work requirements, requiring some recipients to pay some sort of a premium, from very low end to, I think, up to $25 a month, and a copayment on doctor's visits. A couple of those would reduce the number of benefit packages. But they'd also look for some caps on utilization of current services. And some of these reforms, you know, are good. Some, though, would just could end up exacerbating the problem we already have in Medicaid, where the program and the managed care organizations, you know, what they pay out for hospitals and for doctors for services is so much less than what private insurance pays for those exact same services that doctors aren't willing to take Medicaid patients. This could even reduce that farther, and a lot of those people on Medicaid who already have limited access to health care would actually get lower health care in exchange for basically this expansion, which is largely extended for, you know, lower income, but you're talking about lower income adults and the non-disabled. In many ways, it's making a trade-off of cutting the social safety net for the people who need it the most to expand it to populations who have less need.
Richard Weishaupt, what do you say to that? That, you know, doctors are dropping Medicaid, they're not accepting it, that there are longer waits perhaps for people who do qualify, that maybe the care is not what it could be. How do you respond to Nate's concerns?
I've spent my career working on those problems. And I welcome Mr. Benefield to those difficult issues. The number of doctors accepting Medicaid is not going down; it's going up. And one of the reasons for that is that the Affordable Care Act requires that doctors be paid, that primary care doctors, loosely defined, get paid the same rate that the Medicare program pays. And that is starting to show improvement as doctors learn about that. That's starting to show improvement in the uptake of accepting medical assistance recipients.
And Nate Benefield has also mentioned that his organization is not necessarily in favor of the governor's plan, at least some parts of it. What do you say about Governor Corbett's Healthy PA plan?
We're glad that the governor has address the issue of covering the uninsured. It's been a problem that we've been concerned about for a long time. The Affordable Care Act was passed by Congress 3.5 years ago. It's been vetted by the Supreme Court and found to be constitutional. We had a referendum, if you will, in the presidential election on it. It's time to implement it. Mm-hmm. It is supposed to start January 1st of 2014. Governor's welfare secretary, who would be the lead person on this, is saying that the governor's plan really can't get implemented until 2015. What we're saying is, if the governor has a plan and it needs to be much more fleshed out, but starting January 1, let's throw the switch and cover as many people as we possibly can with 100% federal money, begin to deal with the issues of built-up demand. And then if the governor's got a better idea, he can slowly implement that over the next year. But the those 613,000 people will have the opportunity to get health care coverage that they desperately need.
Let's go to the phones to Quakertown, and we'll welcome Serena to our conversation. Hi, Serena. Welcome to Radio Times.
Hi. Thank you for letting me talk. My concern is that a few months ago, there were big articles in the Enquirer about people being dropped from social service programs because of a lack of adequate staffing in the administration of those programs in Harrisburg. And my concern with Governor Corbett's plan in particular is that he adds another level of needing to, another administrative level of needing to ensure that people are in these job programs. And I'm thinking that many people who should be eligible for assistance would not get it, given the history of what has been happening with social programs in Harrisburg.
Well, thank you, Serena. I'm going to have both of our guests address your question. Richard?
We have a lot of concerns about the governor's idea about adding on a work component to what should be a very simple and streamlined process to get people health insurance. The program that he's proposing to use as the test to make sure that people are looking for work only has 65 offices in the entire state. There's 67 counties, so there aren't even enough offices to cover for there to be one in every county. What the way that the program mostly works is it's a program borrowed from the unemployment compensation program. What that program is based on is that people have access to a computer so that they can look for work online. A lot of the people that are uninsured are so poor that they have no access online. They can't even find a place in their county to go in and make this. And it makes what should be a simple problem of signing up for health insurance what we're afraid is going to be a bureaucratic nightmare.
Nate Benefield, what do you say to Serena's concerns?
Yeah, I mean, In terms of the work requirements, we think this is actually a good model, a good idea. I can't speak to the implementation side of things. I don't have a lot of expertise in that area. But what we've seen with it being implemented in the unemployment compensation, that those recently receiving unemployment compensation are required to look for work. This, of course, implemented back in the 90s with welfare reform the TANF program, that recipients of TANF should have to have work requirements of looking for work or being engaged in work. And this is a good way to go, because we don't want to make people more dependent on government. We want to help them transition into a career and into the workforce. And putting these kind of work requirements, job search requirements, forces welfare recipients and those on unemployment compensation to show they're looking for work, and by doing so, get involved in the workforce and become independent of these government programs. And that's better for the poor in the long run when they can go out and find jobs.
Richard, what do you say? What's wrong with people eventually becoming independent, getting the job training that they need, and being able to purchase their own insurance?
There's nothing wrong with that, and certainly I think we all agree that the best way to support a family is to find work. And this is the people that I see every day that lack insurance, they already know that. It makes perfect sense to have an unemployment compensation system, have a work component, because the whole idea behind it is to get people back into the job market and make sure that they find another job to replace the one that they lost and that they're getting compensation for. Healthcare is completely different. Healthcare is something that people need as a condition precedent in order to be able to look for work, in order to be able to go about their daily lives, and muddying it up with a bunch of hurdles that'll prevent people from getting the doctor's care that they need, perhaps to rejoin the labor force, is not the way to go. And there's a reason why no other state is proposing to do this. It's because it's a bad idea.
Let's go to the phones again to Mayfair and Sean. Welcome, Sean, to Radio Times.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks.
I think we need to reexamine the issue of these doctors that are turning away patients with Medicare. Just simply because they're not paying enough. And secondly, maybe re-examine the cost of medical coverage. The cost of of things like MRIs and et cetera, aren't they a little high as well?
Hmm. All right. Well, thank you for your question, Sean. Nate Benefield, what do you say? You express concerns about doctors not accepting Medicaid patients to begin with. What do you say to Sean's
question? I'm not quite sure what he meant by reexamining that issue. But it is certainly something I don't think, you know, we should ever try and force doctors to take a form of payment that pays less for the same service. But one thing, you know, in terms of the price of things, the second part of his question, is that in our healthcare industry, we don't have price transparency. It's not like you can go into a doctor's office or the hospital and see how much something costs, because it's all being paid for by third parties, whether that's insurance companies or the government through Medicare and Medicaid. And so there isn't the kind of price transparency or competition among prices that you'd see in other businesses. And that's one of the reforms that we have pointed to for a long time of creating greater price transparency and putting more dollars in the hands of consumers. And one of the forms we'd like to see in terms of Medicaid is providing those dollars to individuals through the health savings account model, so they have control over those dollars and moving to that, so that consumers are actually looking at the price of things.
So, Nate, when you suggested early on that Medicaid needs to be reformed before we can even get to the question about expansion, is that what you would have in mind? What might a reformed version of Medicaid look like?
Well, we really like the best model was what they did in Florida a few years ago, when they got a waiver from the federal government and did a pilot in a few counties there. But states like Kansas and Louisiana have similar, where they're giving Medicaid patients a choice of providers amongst different health plans, actually choosing different health insurance providers on a, you know, similar to an exchange type model, where they are getting private insurance. They have flexibility to get different benefit packages, and then it rewards Medicaid patients for healthy behaviors, that they can actually earn up to, in Florida, up to $125 per year for doing preventative services and disease management. And what you've seen there in Florida is that not only are the results better for those who have participated in this pilot program versus traditional Medicaid, but there's actually savings for taxpayers from rewarding the healthy behavior.
Richard Weishaupt, what do you say? Can we take a page from Florida's book, perhaps?
It's an ongoing process to make sure that our healthcare system remains as functional and as cost-effective as possible. And there are many challenges. We shouldn't make those without insurance have to wait until we reach some degree of perfection. There'll always be another hill to climb. There'll always be more improvements to be made. There are inventions in the healthcare system every day. Who had heard of AIDS 30 years ago? We didn't even know that was going to be on the horizon, and we responded to that, perhaps not perfectly, but we realized that we couldn't wait and debate for 30 years what to do about people dying because they had this virus that we didn't even know what it was at first. What I'm saying is that we should cover people now, continue the kind of dialogue that we're having, and try to keep our system as functioning as well as possible.
We are talking about healthcare reform. We're talking about Medicaid expansion and debating the pros and cons of that, and talking about Governor Corbett's plan for a healthy PA. That and much more, including your questions, when Radio Times comes back.
The Bedminster Traditional Artisan Show supports WHYY and features more than 50 of America's noted traditional artisans with handmade items from fine art to original American folk craft. Highlights of this juried art show include fine period furniture, redware pottery, Windsor chairs, hooked rugs, and paintings, all made in America. Saturday and Sunday, September 21st and 22nd at the Upper Bucks Technical School in Bedminster. Proceeds benefit the Bedminster Regional Land Conservancy, helping to protect and preserve open space in Upper Bucks County. Information at BedminsterTraditionalArtisanShow.com.
A mode of transportation, a genre of music.
I mean, when I look at an old bicycle, it's like, that's an instrument. That's not a bike anymore.
Making beautiful music with old bicycles and making a statement about recycling and the environment. That's next time on The Takeaway from PRI Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
1812 Productions, Philadelphia's all comedy theater company, supports WHYY. Now on stage, Bunny Bunny, Gilda Radner, a sort of romantic comedy. An imaginary biography of comedy legend Gilda Radner, Bunny Bunny is a time capsule of Gilda's life and career. From her big break on Saturday Night Live, Bunny Bunny presents Gilda Radner in all her glory, sarcastic, charming, and always funny. Tickets and information at 1812productions.org.
Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moskowane. We are debating Medicaid expansion in light of Governor Corbett's proposal released this week to accept federal aid for expanded health coverage for uninsured Pennsylvanians, but with a couple of strings attached, namely that those who are able-bodied would be enrolled in some sort of work program, and also that there would be premiums of up to $25. We've been talking with guests who are on opposite sides of the fence about Medicaid expansion, even about, to some degree, the governor's plan as well. We're talking with Richard Weishaupt, who is senior attorney at Community Legal Services in Philadelphia, where he specializes in health care law. We're talking with Nate Benefield, who is Director of Policy Analysis for the Commonwealth Foundation for Public Policy Alternatives. And we welcome your calls as well. The number is 888-477-9499. Speaking of calls, gentlemen, we did have a caller who was not able to stay on the line with us, but wanted to know, how will the governor's plan affect senior citizens who can't work? And I'm guessing this is going to the work program component. What happens for someone who is a senior citizen who cannot do that? Richard?
The governor's plan does not the governor's work plan does not affect senior citizens at all. They're exempt from it.
So that would be a non-concern then?
Yeah.
For them. I guess there would be age limits to the work requirement, probably?
Traditionally, these things are set at age 65.
Yeah. All right. Nathan, anything you want to add to that before we move on?
Yeah, just in terms of the, I mean, most, senior citizens as well would, in terms of Medicaid, a lot of Medicaid benefits, they would get maybe in the for the disabled benefits, as most senior citizens would also be getting Medicare benefits. Sometimes there are a lot of groups that are in tandem. And another part of the governor's plan was talking about the long-term care, which is a big portion of the Medicaid program, the long-term care benefits for those who need assistance. But really, as I read, his plan was more of setting up a commission to kind of look at that and study the long-term care issues rather than anything being proposed right now.
Nate, a couple of things. You have written about the difference between coverage and care, number one, and you've also expressed concerns about the increased burden for taxpayers. So let's take both of those maybe and break them down. First, the coverage versus care concern.
Yeah, I mean, we've always stressed that, we want to make sure everyone has access to health care and quality health care, and not necessarily that we give everyone an insurance card or, that says they have that, but doesn't necessarily provide the access to care. And in many cases, government programs don't provide the same access to care as private insurance does. And in some cases, folks on government programs don't even get the same quality of care as those paying out of pocket will. I think it's important to differentiate when we talk about these issues and to have these debates, that we want to focus on what's more important, which is making sure everyone can access health care and not making sure everyone has quote-unquote insurance, which may or may not provide the quality of care.
And then what about the increased taxpayer burden? You have expressed concern that that's going to happen if Medicaid is expanded.
Right. And there's two parts of this is, in terms of talking about the expansion and using this federal money, that it's not really free money that's coming down from the federal government. That's paid for by federal taxes. The estimates, I think the Kaiser Foundation estimates that Pennsylvania's cost for expansion would be $45 billion over the next 10 years. And that would be additional cost because of our opting in to expand. That the Supreme Court, when they ruled on the Affordable Care Act, gave states the option of expanding or not expanding, so they couldn't be forced to expand. The states that have chosen to expand, by doing so increase the costs for there. The states that haven't, by one estimate, I think a Pew estimate, says about $500 billion would be the estimated costs of that. So certainly by choosing to expand, Pennsylvania is driving up the cost of the Affordable Care Act. The other concern with specifically the governor's proposal is that while going to this private option model for those newly eligible participants, I think would provide a better quality of coverage for them by putting them in the private market. It has been estimated that it would cost significantly more than traditional Medicaid, so those costs are probably going to be higher under the private option model, and that was the case in Arkansas. It also proposed something similar. Their costs would be higher for doing it that way rather than even traditional Medicaid.
So, Richard Weishaupt, what do you say to that about the taxpayers' interests in all of this and the quality of care?
Well, I think most of us are taxpayers, including a lot of these low-income folks, the people that pour your coffee, the people that cut your hair, pay taxes just like us, people who maybe have higher paying jobs. One of the things that the Affordable Care does that is really smart is that it says to hospitals, you know, we're not going to pay you for treating uninsured people in the emergency rooms because that's not very efficient. So they've taken away a lot of the money that they have been giving to hospitals for the uninsured and saying, you know what, we'd rather purchase health insurance. We'd rather provide health insurance so that people stay healthy and that they use appropriate levels of care. People go to the emergency room in large part because they don't have any place else to turn. And it winds up costing more. And if that wasn't reimbursed or if there wasn't something done to address it, hospitals would close. Nobody wants that to happen. And so what the Affordable Care Act does is it shifts the money away from that kind of crisis-based approach, and it gives people health insurance so that they can use it appropriately. Nate also talked about access to care, and I think we have agreement that there should be access to care for all Americans. But the problem is, if you don't have insurance and you have very little money or no money, you don't have any access other than the emergency room. And that's not the place to go to get quality care.
I want to invite our listeners to join our conversation. The number is 888-477-9499. We're talking about Medicaid expansion, about Governor Corbett's proposal for covering the uninsured or many of the uninsured in Pennsylvania and whether that is a good idea or not. I want to talk with both of you about some news that came out this morning. Lots of headlines today about a measure that the House passed that would eventually take many people from the food stamp rolls as well. And just interested in the timing, the sort of coincidental timing of these things happening when we're having this discussion on health care. Richard Weishaupt, I'm going to ask you to comment on that first. And Nate, I'd like to hear from you as well.
On the food stamps?
Yes.
Well, what the House has done is said that they want to make drastic cuts in the food stamp program, cut off 30% of the men, women, and children who need supplemental assistance to purchase enough food to have food security, and to cut $40 billion in spending in the food stamp program. There will be a downward trend in food stamps as the economy continues to recover, and obviously it can't come soon enough. But just cutting 30% of the people off food stamps is not the way to go. It's wrong, it's not the America that I value, and I don't think the majority of the citizens of the United States value.
What about the timing of this for Pennsylvanians, Richard, in light of the health care debate?
Well, it just goes to show you that some of the challenges and that people have different opinions, and that especially in a time where we're just coming out of a recession, that there are a lot of measures that kick into place when we have a recession to try to help people over the most difficult spots. And it's important not to get too worked up if people need to turn to government or charity in greater numbers during the recession. That's to be expected. That's what the programs are there for. And as we continue to improve, those numbers will go down.
Nate, what do you say? Would this bill, if it ultimately became law, ultimately exacerbate matters for people who are in need of, or most in need, whether it be food, whether it be health care, all of those things? What do you say about that?
Well, I think, you know, one thing Richard was talking about is that we're just coming out of a recession. Well, we've been just coming out of a recession for 4 years now. And the reason our economy has been so slow to recover is in part the policies that are in crowding out private jobs and preventing private from jobs from being created. Part of the food stamps reform includes the work requirements that we talked about in the Medicaid reform of encouraging people to actually get off government dependency, look for work and find jobs. Those are the kinds of things we need to make people more independent of government and help our economy start growing again. So I think that putting some of those work requirements, work search requirements in there is key to reforming the system. The other thing you asked about in terms of the timing of this, I think it is, there are different things. This is obviously the U.S. Congress versus Governor Corbett's proposal here in the state. But what the federal government is facing is massive deficits and, out-of-control spending and trying to balance the federal budget, or at least not really balance it, but make the deficit a little bit smaller. They're looking for things to cut and are, I think, looking at our proposal to expand Medicaid, depending on the federal aid coming at 100% and then eventually 90% of our Medicaid costs, that we can't rely on that because the federal government is going to have to be making cuts to bring it itself into balance. And so I don't think we can depend on expecting the federal government to continue to keep the promises made in 2010 how much they're going to be giving the state for Medicaid assistance.
So we've got a couple of things here, Nate. First of all, I know that there is a whole other battle waiting in the Senate over this food stamp issue. Is it likely to become law in your view? What are your thoughts?
We don't follow the workings of Congress as much. I would suspect it's going to have a lot of difficulty in the Democrat-controlled Senate, and you see very little agreement between the U.S. House and the U.S. Senate. So my quick take is probably it will not have a lot of legs in the Senate there, but I could be mistaken on that.
Do you agree, Richard?
Yeah, I do. I do. I'd like to address two other issues, though, that Nate brought up. One is jobs. Expanding Medicaid now would mean that we were there've been three independent studies. All of them suggest that expanding Medicaid in Pennsylvania would create 35,000 to 40,000 jobs, good-paying jobs in the healthcare field to address some of the needs of some of the folks who don't have healthcare and basically don't spend any money in healthcare because they don't have any to spend. That would be a tremendous boost for the Pennsylvania economy, and the multiplier effect of that would be even greater. The other thing I'd like to point out is that the Medicaid program was enacted in the early 60s in 1963. Since that time, the percentage that the federal government has promised the states that they would pay has never been cut in 50 years. So, yeah. We could elect an entirely different group of folks who could say that things have to change. But in this kind of life and challenges, we're never going to see a program that's more rock solid than the Medicaid program. This president is certainly not going to cut them. The Senate is not going to cut them. Maybe the House might propose to do that. I mean, the House is now proposing to hold the rest of the government hostage unless Obamacare is repealed. So, I mean, that's their opinion. I guess they can do that. I think it's a mistake. I think that we have to make our priorities, and I think with wars ending, I think that there's money that can be better spent on the home front, doing things like covering all of the people that need health care.
Let's go back to the phones and squeeze in one last call before we say goodbye. We'll go to Westchester and Catherine. Welcome, Catherine, to Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks so much for taking my call. And I really just have a comment as I listen to this program, which I think is so timely and important. It just seems disingenuous to me that we members of our community can say that we want a vibrant, healthy, working, contributory populace, and then seek to not fund or cut two very obvious factors to contribute to that vibrant, healthy populace: food and work and health care. I work daily. I run a program for homeless families here in Chester County, and I see daily our working families who are working receiving food stamps, working but not receiving health care. They're not able to manage their ongoing illnesses, which does take them out of the workforce, and they do end up using that very expensive emergency care. And it's just insane as a thinking person to have this be our policy. I am a taxpayer, and let me tell you, every single day my taxes go to buy things I don't support or approve of. I can get behind making sure that people have food and health care so that they can be participating members of our community.
Well, Catherine, thank you for your call. Nate, your response.
Yeah, I agree with the premise of the caller that, you know, we want to make sure everyone has access to food and health care. I think where we disagree and where, you know, it's not for a lack of caring that I propose these our solutions, but the results that I believe that the best way to help the poor is not necessarily through a government program, which in many cases actually hurts the poor. We've done a lot of studies on how different government programs actually harm the poor, and propose solutions that you know, rely more on charity care, rely more on the free market, the private sector, and make reforms within, for instance, the health insurance regulations that would make health care more affordable for individuals to, and we ought to help the poor, but not necessarily through more government spending.
Finally, Richard Weishaupt, if you are an uninsured Pennsylvanian, would you be optimistic at this point that help's on the way?
Cautiously optimistic.
There you have it. We have been talking about Medicaid expansion. We have been talking about Governor Corbett's proposal for health care here in Pennsylvania. I want to thank our guests, Richard Weishaupt, who is senior attorney at Community Legal Services in Philadelphia. Nate Benefield is director of policy analysis for the Commonwealth Foundation for Public Policy Alternatives. Thanks to both of you for being on Radio Times. And our engineer today has been Kevin Griffin. Our producers are Emily Bryant, Patty McMahon, and Debbie Builder, and Susan Greenbaum. I'm Tracy Matisak, filling in for Marty Moskowain. You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY.